Welcome to Deeply Disturbing Things,
the podcast.
I'm Naomi.
And I'm Macy.
And we're two anxious counselors talking about disturbing things.
Join us.
Dive in. And we're videoing ourselves in a new room again this time. Third podcast in a row.
These are your green money chairs.
These are the money chairs. And they're called the money chairs because every time someone sits in them, I make a coin.
Dang. It's hardcore. Is there any way you can move your mic so I'm not staring at it in front of your face like that? Like just slightly to this side, maybe? It's just like this? Looking at a big stick in your face.
Oh, but I don't. How about that?
That's better. Like I can see your face okay. Now.
Well, kanpai. We have some sake and we have some wine. We have a lot of things.
Mm-hmm. And boy, do we have a good night ahead.
Happy Thirsty Thursday.
Thirsty Thursdays. Yeah, this was just for fun because I wanted to try a new sake.
Oh, I have a new disturbing place to take you.
Oh, God. Okay, great.
But I'm not going to tell you because it needs to be a full kidnapping situation.
Okay. All right. Just give me like 2 hours notice.
Perfect. I'll just let you know what kind of shoes to wear.
I just need to make sure I am like have pants on. That's all.
Yeah. We're not.
I'm excited for my topic today.
I'm excited for my topic.
You get to go first.
Do you have any check-ins?
Oh, yeah. Yes. So I joined a lawn starter like app thing where they mow your lawn for like a set monies and almost got, bamboozled by somebody who came and mowed my lawn sooner than the scheduled date and then sent me a bill separately that was like three times as much. And then I got them in trouble for trying to poach me.
I should hook you up with my lawn ladies.
Lawn ladies.
I have lawn ladies.
That sounds wonderful.
They only charge $25 and they edge and do the blowy thing after.
Yeah, this is like $47 for edge and blowy.
Yeah, the lawn ladies are bomb.
Do they travel to the valley?
I'll
let me know.
I'll send
let me
you
know.
The contact.
Yeah, so that was really it was me. That. And then I had another weird app thing. So I was getting HelloFresh, that like food ordering thing. I started getting them like 2 weeks ago sent to my house, labeled to me, but no information. I never got billed for anything. Of course, I ate it.
Was it good food?
At risk of being poisoned. Yes.
Is it like worth it?
It was worth it. So the weird thing was I had a client session last week, like a day before the package came, and they were telling me about their HelloFresh. So I've had it in my mind that this client somehow was sending me HelloFresh, and I was a little worried about eating the food.
You thought your client might be trying to kill you?
Yeah. But I ate it. I ate it all.
And you didn't die.
No, I didn't die.
And you didn't get diarrhea.
No, I was fine. The food was actually like good. I still couldn't justify the price point, but, yeah. So found out though, my mom sent it to me for my birthday.
Oh, that's a nice gift.
Yeah. She just forgot to tell me.
I enjoy the gift of food.
Me too. It was a great gift.
I'm loving sitting here in this new spot.
I like it too.
We have a window behind us.
These chairs are really comfortable.
We might have a looky-loo walk by. You never know.
It's exciting.
My ex-husband lives beneath us, and this is how he gets to his apartment.
I like that you were able to like get your ex-boyfriend, your ex-husband, in the basement of...
That's where he belongs. Dungeon.
Your old house.
Dungeon Dave.
What are your check-ins?
That's all. Oh, I went roller skating today at my lunchtime for 15 minutes.
Good job.
I wanted to go for a half hour, but I ran out of neighborhood real quick. When you're on wheels, it goes by fast. But it was fun. And I'm going to find a way to make it my full half hour lunchtime next time.
Kudos.
But it was like a really good way to break up the day.
I feel like I'd be so self-conscious, like skating and just having everyone looking at you because they would.
Everybody was looking at
me. Yes, 100%.
I just had to not give a fuck. I mean, it was fun, and I had some tunes playing, and, you know, it was just really nice to go back to work, just having gotten in touch with my true self, like reconnected with that, you know, I'm a punk rock badass, and I don't give a fuck. You know, it just helps when you're going back working on Excel spreadsheets for the rest of the day.
I feel like that would look a little different for me. It'd be like, how do I, like, both skate and have a panic attack at the same time? And then I'd come back and just, like, panic sweats.
I got new wheels for the first time in years, and I just ordered a new helmet, which I should have done like probably about 8 years ago is when mine probably wore out its impacts.
There's a piece of my skull, I think, right here that's like chipped off. It's like a different shape, and there's like a floaty bit over here, and I'm pretty sure it's from Derby. I don't know.
A floaty bit?
A floaty bit off of like this little part of my skull. I think I could blame my helmet for that.
I got a really nice helmet. It's one of those S1 multi-impact ones.
Ooh.
A lifer, it's called.
Mine is one of those. It's watermelon colored. And then I spray painted it.
I got black.
Ugly.
You'll see it.
I bet I will. Cool.
L'chaim. We're drinking sake out of paper cups because I don't want to do the dishes after before we leave here.
At any time, you can stop doing the head nod to the video. The head
hey,
up.
What's
like,
up?
Hey, what's up?
Hey, girl.
Hey, girl. Hey. All right, get started. It's your topic.
Okay.
Go get it.
Oh, and also, I just need to say, we've discovered there's a length of time limit to our podcast that you can only talk for 2 hours and it cuts you off. We experienced that last time.
Yes, because yours was long.
I talked too much. So yeah, I will remedy that tonight.
Okay.
So this is something that I had never heard about. My son Skylar told me about it. And it's known, but it's not like super mainstream known. So I was very excited to dive into this. Mm. I'm going to talk about the Hammond circus train wreck of 1918.
Yeah, I've never heard of that before.
Mm-hmm. Well, you know how I love, you know, that whole allure of
like freak shows.
Freak shows and trains, mm-hmm. hopping mm-hmm. on the trains. I mean, we live like there's a train like right there. Like we may even hear it in the background.
It's very loud.
So this happened just outside Hammond, Indiana. The Hagenbeck Wallace Circus train killed an estimated 86 performers and roustabouts.
Roustabouts?
Yes.
What does that mean?
That's a new word.
What does that mean? I just learned a new word.
It's a circus word. I mean, it can be applied to other situations.
Yeah, as I say, can I get context? Give me
It's like a worker. Like roustabout, where you're a like general worker, like you would just help with all the things.
Okay.
Like carrying this here and there, erecting this, tearing down that. Yeah.
Okay, I'm going to use it.
Yeah. So also 127 people were injured of the 400 performers and roustabouts that were aboard the train. So this circus, I hadn't even heard of this circus. It was one of the largest of the time. And so it was heading to Hammond for a performance when an empty train that was coming along the track behind them at full speed plowed into the back of the car, into the sleeper cars. So individuals were either killed by the impact or they were buried under the debris that quickly caught fire. And they burned to death before they could be rescued.
It'd be so scary because there's nothing you can do.
No, it's very sad. Mm-hmm. So I wanted to talk a little bit about the Hagenbeck Wallace Circus. So this was owned by Benjamin E. Wallace, and it was a major rival of both the Ringling Brothers Circus and the Barnum and Bailey Circus, which you've probably heard of those. Mm-hmm. Which those combined later and became the Ringling Brothers Barnum and Bailey Circus, which I saw a lot as a kid until I realized it was bad and you shouldn't go to circuses because they're mean to elephants.
Very mean.
But when you're a kid, you don't know. You just go to the circus. You have your pink, you know, rectangle of popcorn.
Pink rectangle?
You never had those pink, like, hard brick popcorn rectangles that you have to, like, gnaw a piece off and...
I don't think your parents gave you real popcorn.
No, you buy it at the thing. It was a real discounted treat, believe me.
What made it hard?
I don't know. I don't know the process.
Is it just old?
No, it just always tasted like that.
Why was it pink?
Artificial colors?
Never seen this before.
Okay, I'm going to find you a pink brick of popcorn.
Where would you even find that?
I'm sure I can find one around here somewhere, maybe at the grocery outlet. Oh. I don't know.
Well, as we went through earlier, I don't refuse food, so I will eat it.
I'm going to find one, even if I have to get it on eBay.
How are your new headphones, by the way?
I'm liking them.
Good.
It's more fun to have headphones than not when you're doing a podcast.
It is.
So this guy, Benjamin Wallace, he'd always wanted to own a circus. And so he did that. He fulfilled his dreams. So it opened in 1884. And it was first performing on, they would travel by riverboats and barges and showed along the Ohio and Mississippi rivers. So that'd be pretty cool to see, like, circus animals like and performers. River life,
like a giraffe floating down
exactly.
the barge.
I think that would be really dope. And so then eventually it combined with this other circus that was run by Carl Hagenbeck. He was an animal importer and trainer. And so then it became the Hagenbeck Wallace Circus. So I guess circuses combined a lot back then. So during the circus's years of operation, it suffered many tragedies. On July of 1903, the circus train wrecked in Shelbyville, Illinois, killing 2 people and injuring 4.
Why are so many trains wrecking?
It was part of the risks involved in circus life, is these train accidents.
I mean, like, are they like hitting something? Are they derailing? Like, what's the...
I don't know, like, if train travel had as many safety standards as it does today. And maybe as a result of these, they kept like improving standards as they went. But that trains were the primary way circuses traveled. And so train life and circus life were like integrally connected. And then just 2 weeks later, the circus trains again wrecked, and this time killed 35 and injured 121. And then there was the Great Easter Flood of 1913, which happened right outside Benjamin Wallace's house. So he purchased this big piece of land, and that's where the circus wintered. So in the off season, they would all live together. I mean, I'm imagining it's kind of like dorms and bunks and kind of like camp, like circus camp. But this was right above where the Wabash and Mississinewa rivers came together. And the waters rose so quickly that workers and animals were trapped in the winter quarters and couldn't get out. And it said that the hooved animals were released in hopes that they could find higher ground on their own, but that the elephants...
No!
I know.
No!
I know. Everything about elephants just makes me so sad.
So sad.
But the elephants stayed and tried to help their people because they're like loyal like that.
What?
Yeah.
That's they so went heartbreaking.
They refused to leave their trainers. And so the elephants were beating on the walls of the house trying to get into the home. And ultimately, 5 courageous elephants perished.
Hold the door.
But 4 others survived, along with George the hippo and 9 polar bears.
Aww.
11 people were killed in the flood. And the drowned elephants were skinned to make umbrella stands.
Oh, well,
not sure how I feel about that.
With love?
I'm hoping it's with love. I'm hoping it's a use the whole animal type of philosophy, but I don't know. So after that flood, Wallace sold the circus, but it continued on. It was still called the Hagenbeck Wallace Circus. So there were many famous performers there. Emmett Kelly, who was a very famous clown, and I Googled him to try to get a photo. And there's so much art based on his image. So that's what he looked like. It's kind of that classic, like, old-timey clown look.
Mm-hmm. The sad clown.
I will post these on our Facebook group, if you're a member.
If you're not, join us on Facebook.
Join us. And then also a young clown named Red Skeleton, who is another famous clown. And that's a picture of him. And I guess he had red hair. That's why he was called Red Skeleton.
Mm.
So they didn't wear quite as much makeup in the old days. And here's a picture of the whole clown troupe from that circus. Like a whole
group. A lot of clowns.
It's a lot of clowns.
And that's like someone's nightmare right there.
It is. Or someone's dream, depending.
I never have heard somebody say their dream is to be surrounded by clowns.
You have never known anyone who's loved clowns?
No. Everyone I know has watched the movie It.
Okay. So I randomly went to a yard sale with my kids a few years back up in Hilliard, and it was an estate sale, and it was a clown lover, and the whole backyard was filled with clown things, clown pictures, little ceramic clowns, clown like stitchery doodles.
Well, that's obviously where you go to die.
We did purchase one clown wall art.
Of course
you did.
That
still exists somewhere. And seems super haunted also.
Haunted clown photos.
So with circus life, you're a traveling city. So it was said that you're a city without a zip code. And so you just bring everything you need on the train from one city to the next. So you'd bring your own electrical power. They would have their own schools for the kiddies. They'd have their own, you know, kitchens to make food, their own stores, laundry, and they'd even, you know, have pastors to do the church services.
For when they all died in train accidents.
Oh, I guess that's coming.
How do you keep the pastor from being a victim?
Well, I mean, it's kind of like a family. So I'm sure if they didn't have a pastor, another circus would loan them one.
It's very nice.
So the term circus may be confused with carnival. So I learned the difference. They're different businesses and cultures. So a circus is an autonomous business owned by one individual or corporation. And a carnival consists of a whole bunch of independent concessionaires and ride owners who may book onto many different shows during a season.
Were you inspired for this topic because of our
Carnival graveyard.
Yeah,
trip.
Our carnival graveyard.
Well, that's how it came up.
Because
telling my son that we went to a carnival graveyard, and then he said, "That's not a carnival graveyard. Let me tell you about a carnival graveyard."
Oh, he got deep real quick.
And that's where this came
from. He's so dark.
That's where this came from. Yeah. It's like, tell me. I'm like, what? I go, that's not true. And I looked it up, like, oh, it is true. Podcast topic. So in a carnival, there's all those mechanical rides and things like that. In a circus, there's those tents, there's the trapeze artists, the lions, tigers, and clowns. So that's the main difference. So in the years past, circuses, and then today they're still traveling circuses. I was interested to find out. They move every day. So that's 7 towns a week, 2 performances a day from the opening in spring until the close in late fall. There are usually no days off. So you'll rarely hear about a show person taking a sick day. And so the show must go on is like really
because that's your day-to-day life.
Mm-hmm. And I learned that Ringling Brothers and Barnum and Bailey closed in 2017.
That's a link with your Tiger King, no off days.
Connections everywhere. So there are still traveling circuses in the U.S. and around the world, and some of these have animal acts and others do not. Oh my gosh, that was so loud. Now let's get into the crash. So this occurred June 22nd, 1918 at about 4 a.m. The circus had just completed 2 performances in Michigan City, Indiana, and was traveling overnight the 45 miles to Hammond. The first train, which was carrying workers and many of the circus animals, went on to the destination. There was no problem. And so there was all these ads in Hammond, you know, all these posters that the circus is coming to town. And the circus had gone to this town many times before. So 4 years in the past, 1907, 1910, 1912, 1914. So this was a big circus of its time. and it was carried on 3 trains. It had over 22 tents and 1,000 employees. And so this was a big circus, so the town was looking forward to it. So earlier, 4 a.m., when the train was heading there, the train had to stop because it had an overheated wheel bearing box. And I guess if you didn't fix that, the train could catch on fire or a fire could start. And so it was a common problem, but you had to like stop and address it. So the train pulled over to a side track, but the train was really long. And so a segment of the train that had the 4 sleeper cars was still on the main track. So they followed all the protocols. They put up red lights along to alert oncoming trains that the train was stopped. And they had like different stop signals set back down the line. But then this train, as I mentioned, was carrying 20 empty Pullman cars that had just delivered soldiers set for deployment to the war front in Europe. And it was coming at full speed. And it was piloted by engineer Alonzo Sargent. And he'd been previously fired for falling asleep on the job. So he was tired. He hadn't slept for 24 hours. And he fell asleep and didn't see the red lights or the stop signals. And so a circus train worker that was waiting further down the rail started waving his lantern frantically, trying to get the driver's attention, and even just ended up throwing the lantern at the train because it wasn't slowing down. And he was yelling and screaming and panicking, as you would. So this oncoming train was going between 25 and 60 miles an hour. They're not exactly sure. And this train was carrying cars made of steel.
Ooh, those don't.
And it plowed into the back of the circus train, which was made of wood. And so the circus train just got splintered. So all these circus performers and roustabouts, they're in there sleeping in their like bunks.
It would have just collapsed.
Yeah, and so the sound of the collision was so loud that nearby farmers woke up and they all rushed to see what happened. And so all the sleeping cars had like telescoped in on each other before the train finally came to a stop. And then if that wasn't bad enough, then a fire broke out because the train used kerosene lanterns as their light inside the train. And so you have a wooden train and now you have these kerosene lanterns starting a fire. So the fire just went really fast. So it started immediately.
You probably couldn't even pull anybody out.
So Henry Miller, the assistant light manager, was among the survivors thrown from the wreckage. And he only had minor injuries. And he said, "I was in the last coach next to the caboose and was asleep when we were hit. I woke to the sound of splintering wood. Then there was another crash and another and another. The train buckled on itself. It parted in the center as clean as though it had been sliced with a giant knife." So that steel train just split everything.
Did a Titanic.
So then survivors of the crash, they're trapped under the wreckage. They can't get out and they couldn't escape the flames. So an estimated 86 people died in this accident. There were conflicting reports of whether any animals were killed. One report I read said one elephant and 2 camels. A lot of other reports said no animals had been killed in the crash. And that's something I find very interesting when I do my research, because I always try to look at different sources and they will say completely different information. So I don't know. Animals may have been killed, maybe not. So among the dead were Arthur Dierks and Max Nietzsporn of the Great Dierks Brothers, which was a strong man act, and Jenny Ward Todd of the Flying Ward. So those were probably like the acrobats.
Trapezers.
Yes, exactly. Oh, I need some more sake. Do you?
Yeah, let's do that.
I'll fill this up here. You're always supposed to fill the other person first for luck.
Does that, it gives you luck to give me drink first?
Yes.
I'm going to pour.
Unless I'm a selfish bastard. Got it. That leads to no good in life. So it will be never known how many people exactly died in this crash or who died. And that's one of the really sad parts of this.
Oh, yeah.
Because you know how you always say, like, I'm going to run away to the circus. Like, that was a real thing.
Wait, you said, you know how you always.
You know how?
I didn't.
You always say that?
I didn't always say that. But did you say that?
I thought about it.
I feel like you would have.
I thought about it. There was circus camp. I looked it up.
Wait. It was circus camp?
Yeah.
I never got to go to circus
camp. No, I didn't get to go, but no. I looked it up and thought about it.
I bet you did.
So that was real, though. People really would. Like, that was an option in life. Maybe if traditional paths weren't interesting or available to you, you could just drop everything and join the circus. And, you know, you didn't have to necessarily have your same identity that you did, or maybe...
It's like roller derby.
Nobody even knew it. Yeah, you'd be just womb punch.
Oh, I don't know what that would look like on a stage.
So people's names may have not have been known, and there also may not have been any family to report them missing. So if they left on bad terms, nobody's going to miss them, yeah. Sadly. So this Hagenbeck Wallace Circus only missed one performance. They went on, all the other circuses contributed, you know, acts and people to help, you know, the show go on, because
like pick it up. Yeah,
because the circus family
must go on,
extends beyond like an individual circus. Like, it's definitely a family, which was really cool to learn about. And then the act included many of the same performers who had just been in the crash 3 days before.
Wow. Talk about trauma.
Yeah. And it was, so one person said, forced mirth under the big top was courage and necessity. Mm. This is a reporter. One's work is one's work. If it happens that this work is to make the kiddies laugh and clap, why then one must make the kiddies laugh and clap?
Okay, yeah.
So you couldn't just be like, yeah, I'm going to take a week off. Like, you had to just keep going.
Because it was their life again, and I'm sure any money they got was used to live, so...
Here's some pictures of the crash.
Dang, post those. That's brutal.
There's nothing left.
Yeah, it's just a frame, part of a frame.
Yeah. So we mentioned the religious officials. So three clergymen officiated at the funeral, a Catholic priest, a Baptist minister, and Reverend Colonel F.J. Owens, chaplain of the Showman's League of America. So this is like a association for circus folk. 1,500 mourners attended the funeral, including a clown named Big Joe Coyle. This is a picture of Big Joe Coyle in his clown attire, riding a bike with not holding onto the handlebars.
No handlebars.
So Joe Coyle would have been in his mid-30s at the time. He survived the train crash with minor injuries. His wife, Stella, and sons, Howard and Joe Jr., who were age 9 and 2, were with him on the train. Joe Coyle was thrown free of the wreckage in the crash. His wife and children survived the impact, but were pinned under the debris. Mm-hmm. So some victims, like the Coyles, survived the impact, but they were trapped in flames, and they begged people to shoot them to put them out of their misery. But instead, the rescuers were compelled to stand by, helpless and hysterical, as they listened to the agonized screams of human beings slowly burned to death. So this was from the newspaper, the Indianapolis Star.
Trauma is real. It instantly brought up the Station House Fire in my brain.
Yeah. And then what made it worse is the only water available to fight the fire came from nearby shallow marshes. So there wasn't
a
big, ready, full water source. Mm-hmm. And then a crane came in to try to lift the wreckage off people to free them, but then it couldn't approach because the fire was so hot. Do you see how my microphone just sags as we go? My microphone has ED.
Keep going. I'll try to fix it.
So the Daily City Gate And Constituent Democrat, another paper of the time, wrote that the task of identifying the dead and seriously injured was almost hopeless. Not only were many of the bodies burned so badly that recognition was impossible, but practically everyone on the train was hurt or killed. So poor Joe Coyle, he couldn't stand by helpless, but really, really tried to get his wife and kids out.
Yeah, I can imagine.
Until he was dragged away by rescuers. So sadly,
so sad.
The trapped Coyles were burned to death. So Joe Coyle lay on a stretcher and he cried and said, "I wish I could have died with them." So his little son, Joe Jr., was only 2, and he had been billed as the youngest clown in the U.S. So he was following in daddy's footsteps. So the Indianapolis Star reported at the time, at noon, bodies were still being hauled from the mass. It was impossible to say the things taken from the burning wreckage were human beings. Reporting was a lot more dramatic.
It sounds like so artistic, the way that they talk about it. It's like, wow.
It was just so much more emotion and feeling than now. Everything now, people are trying to be too, like, I don't know.
Hard-hitting.
Or just, like, too objective.
Yeah. In versus, like, yeah, I don't know. It's almost like they even romanticized it a bit.
Well, have you ever heard the recording of, I think it was a reporter that witnessed when the Hindenburg crashed? Mm-mm. It's very, like, he was weeping. Like, it was very dramatic. Ugh. So this was the deadliest circus train accident in U.S. history. Okay. Now I want to talk about the real carnival graveyard. Actually, it's a circus graveyard. So we learned there's a difference between carnivals and circuses. So there's a place called Showman's Rest at Woodland Cemetery. And so this is where these folks were buried. And I saw a lot of footage of it. It's surrounded by statues of 5 elephants with their trunks lowered in mourning.
Oh, that's cool.
Mm-hmm.
That'd be cool to go to.
Yeah, definitely.
That's an elephant graveyard.
The idea of having a place for show people had been discussed at various times in the history of the Showman's League, but nothing had been done about it. But so this Showman's League, I looked up their website. It's pretty cool. It was founded in 1913 by a group of outdoor showmen. Buffalo Bill Cody was the club's first president. So they say on their website, Showman's League of America is a community of show people, both men and women, dedicated to service and fellowship. So pretty neat. And they purchased the first cemetery plot, and it had just been purchased like right before this.
Convenient.
And yeah, it was very timely. So as the news of the accident spread, the Showman's League of America moved to provide a last resting place for the crash victims. So 5 days after the crash, the survivors gathered at Woodland Cemetery for the burial of 56 of their fellows. So 86 died, but I think some probably had family that claimed them. And so this gravesite is very unusual because each person has their own coffin, but it's a mass gravesite. It's just one big hole. And here's a picture of it.
Wow.
So all the coffins are just
side by side. That is a big hole.
Yes.
How many in that were all of them?
56.
Wow.
Yep. So it's 35 feet by 24 feet and 5 feet deep. I always thought you had to go 6 feet deep, but maybe not in the old days.
Guess not.
Each of the 56 has a headstone. In 2 cases, all they knew was their nickname. So the headstones say Baldy, and another says Smiley. Another headstone just has their job. It says 4-horse driver. But there are only a few that actually have names. Most of them say unknown male or unknown female.
Oh, sad. Like they couldn't recognize the
bodies. They couldn't recognize them. Yep.
Burned. It's yeah. That's very so sad. Yeah.
Yeah. It's really sad because I feel like these are, you know, souls that are kind of lost to history. I mean, I'm glad this is a place that, you know, is known and people do go there. So I think that helps keep the memory alive. And the Showman's League, they do have something there every year, like a memorial. So that's a picture of the headstone. See, they just say like unknown male, female. Mm-hmm. And they all have the same date, which is kind of creepy.
Eerie, yeah.
Yeah, this one says four horse driver. And then here's a picture of the elephant statues.
Well, that's pretty
cool. So they surround
the place. Where was this at again? Where's the memorial at?
Oh my gosh.
This is like you asking me the Stonehenge questions. Like,
I know.
The cool parts that matter.
Where is it?
You just let me know when you figure that out.
Oh, look, I put Showman's Rest at Woodlawn Cemetery Inn, and then I have a blank because I couldn't figure it out, actually. There was conflicting information on my Google.
Somewhere those elephants exist.
It's somewhere.
I believe you.
Maybe it's secret on purpose.
Probably not.
So what happened with that train driver?
What happened?
So the engineer sergeant and his fireman, Gustav Klaus, were criminally charged in Lake County, Indiana for their part in the great circus train wreck of 1918.
Negligence.
The jury found itself deadlocked after a trial, and a mistrial was declared.
What?
Prosecutors declined to retry the case, and charges were dismissed.
Why? I don't understand. They didn't sleep for 24 hours. He then fell asleep and hit the train and then killed all those people. I think it was pretty black and white.
And not only did the case get dismissed, but they also tried to blame the victims by saying you shouldn't be driving a wooden train and using kerosene lamps.
I mean, maybe fair, but it's not like they lit their own train on fire.
No, I know. It's just bizarre.
Pretty sure I don't know.
There should have been something.
Yeah, something. So he just, there was no problem?
There was nothing. Yeah, it was just dismissed.
Interesting. I wonder what went into that at that time.
So the Hagenbeck Wallace Circus continued on until 1938 when they finally closed their doors due to low ticket sales. And you can go to their old winter quarters in Peru, Indiana, and it's now a circus museum, the Circus Hall of Fame. And that's the story of the 1918 Hammond Circus train wreck.
I like it. I mean, not the train wreck, but your story. It was good.
It was interesting to learn about.
Yeah, it definitely is like a whole unique culture within itself.
Mm-hmm.
I've learned way more about clowns and freak shows and circuses than I ever knew before.
I don't have a clown fear.
I'm not scared of them.
I mean, I don't want one jumping out of at me. Let's be clear.
Like from behind the corner.
Yeah.
I don't think I've ever actually, I can't recall ever like seeing a clown or being around.
You've never seen a clown?
Not like in person. In person.
You've never seen a clown in person?
That I can cognitively remember. Which,
I don't understand.
What do you mean?
What that even means. How do you not ever see a clown? Just out and about at the park? Making a balloon animal?
No.
Making a balloon sword that looks like a balloon
wiener? Why are you around so many clowns? That's what I want to know.
Why aren't you?
I don't know. I don't go to like circuses often. Sounds like you've been to a lot of circuses. There's
street performers though, too.
Where?
On the street.
Performing. In this neighborhood? Those aren't street performers.
Damn it.
Wrong.
What do you got? I'm excited for what you got.
Parades? No, I still don't think I've seen clowns in parades. Parades are all just like people in cars.
I'll find you a clown.
And fire trucks.
I'll bring a clown to you.
I don't think I even really want that to happen.
Too late.
Are you ready for my topic?
I'm really ready. I'm going to crack into this.
Me too.
It's loud.
It's so loud in this echoey room. Okay.
Is our sound echoing or does it sound okay? Ask the people.
People,
do we sound echoey or does it sound
okay? We'll see. It should just pick up your voices. But
okay. Let's hope. Good.
No, I said it's a little echoey. No.
Damn it. I don't know what to do, but it's too late now.
It's fine.
We can't stop now.
We've gone too far.
We'll hang a tapestry next time.
Yeah. Tapestry. I do like the background, so.
Yeah. Cheers.
All right. So.
Sponsor us, House Wine.
Good luck with that. Push that harder. See if we can make it happen. My dad said we went to a circus when I was a baby. So that is actually verifying the fact that I did not go as an young adult.
I know, but you don't even have to go. The clowns come to you.
What does that mean? They don't.
They do.
They don't. They shouldn't.
Most of my clown encounters were not consensual.
That's where it's not okay. And you should be scared.
This is taking a turn.
This is revealing a lot about you right now. All right. I'm going to do kind of a rags to riches story slash back to rags.
Oh.
Yeah. Here we go.
Okay.
All right. Started with money, as it often does in New York. A crisp $100 bill sliding across the counter at a concierge desk at the 11 Howard. This is a sleek new hotel in the Soho district in New York. Looking up, the concierge, 25 years old, her name is, she goes by Neff, was surprised to see the cash came from a young woman around her age. She had a heart-shaped face, pouty lips, red hair, her eyes, and these chunky, designer glasses. Said she looked European, and she just said, "I'm looking for the best food in Soho." So that's how the story starts.
Okay.
She says, "What's your name?" The girl says that she is Anna Delvey, basically alluding that she is an heiress somewhere from Germany.
That's a lot of people going by.
It's a lot of motorcycles.
It might be the FBC.
What?
The Full Moon.
Clowns?
Full Moon Bike Club. I bet somebody's dressed as a fucking clown. I'm not even kidding.
What's the Full Moon Bike Club?
They, every full moon, all ride around in mass and go bar hopping.
Why? Why is that a thing?
Why not?
This
is Brown's edition. These are the things that happen. This is why you don't even need television in this neighborhood. You could sit on your porch and be entertained 24/7.
Interesting. Okay. All right. Sorry. Back on track. Anna Delvey, said the young woman. So she'd been staying at the hotel for a month, but she was staying in kind of the mid-range option rooms, about $400 a night. It's a bit pricey for me, but apparently mid-range for most folks there.
Is this recent times?
This is pretty recent times.
Okay.
Yes. Have you heard of Anna Delvey?
No.
No? So this apartment was had oversized windows looking out to the streets of Soho Hotel. And she says, "Thanks, I'll see you around." That turned out to be a promise. She ended up showing up over the next few weeks. She'd stop by Neff's little concierge desk asking for advice, but it was really clear she already knew all the hotspots. She knew all the names. That's when Neff started to get the idea that she was buying her time. It wasn't about the advice. So she would always come down and give $100. There'd be a line of people and she would just keep putting money on the table to
what
have
does that mean?
Neff talk to her.
What's happening?
She built up this persona. They kind of compared her to Rihanna. When Rihanna stays in hotels, she'll walk around in her robe and she owns the place.
Oh my God, I would love to meet her. She's so fucking cool.
So this was, she was acting like that, but it started with basically just always being down there talking. She would often talk down to not They said it was like in a classist way. So someone said that she said, "What are you bitches, broke?" But they kind of brushed it off like, okay, this like German heiress just doesn't understand like money in the US and what that looks like. She just has so much money. She doesn't get it.
So much money.
So much money. So much money. She's just like throwing money around everywhere in New York.
I can relate.
So usually Neff said that these guests, she was used to them. Like they would go throw their money around and they'd leave. But she stayed there. And they ended up kind of becoming friends over that time. And then there'd be kind of a fight over like who would give her packages, because she'd always give him $100 tip anytime they'd bring something to the room. So there's just all this money involved. So
is that her picture you just threw on the floor?
Yeah. Would you like to see it? It's on the floor. That's her face there. So she said, like, I started to think of Anna as a friend. I still took the money.
I'm not a fan of her eyeliner.
Of her eyeliner?
This eyeliner look was so cool when I was, like, 14.
Well, and she was noted by the Hollywood elite crowd that she wasn't, like, super hot is what they said. She wasn't super hot, but that was okay because she had money. So that's kind of where that
money makes it a lot.
Who cares, right? You know, who can blame Neff for taking the money and still trying to be her friend? You know, and this was actually in Manhattan. Money. You need money to live there. So she did. She took the money. Kept doing favors for her. You'll see all these little pictures of Anna as a like Instagrammy person, which she was. She would post tons of pictures of herself online. She said she gave money to everybody, Uber drivers, $100 cash, meals, like you couldn't even pull out a credit card to pay for something. She would always like stop you and pay for it. So they said that like the way Anna spent money, it was like she couldn't get rid of it fast enough. Her room was overflowing with shopping bags. She would invite Neff to get foot massages, manicures. She would just pay for all this stuff. Sounds pretty perfect, right?
I'd probably go along with it. I'm not going to lie.
Yeah, right. Well, one of the like packages for the like self-care day was like $4,500 that she paid for Neff. I would have a hard time turning that down, you know, whether I thought she was like actually a friend or not.
I just wonder how a $4,500 self-care day compares to $150 self-care day.
It's probably
which
literally,
has been a splurge for me in the past.
Probably literally like, the same thing here. It's just in a different spot that's like, more expensive.
What is that different?
I don't know. Is there like more seaweed you can put on your face? I don't know.
Better seaweed from a different ocean?
A thing? I don't know. Is that an actual thing? I've never had like a seaweed facial.
I feel like I've heard of a seaweed wrap, but that might be something I ate in a sushi restaurant. I'm not sure.
I think so. Okay. So Neff actually had a boyfriend at the time. She and Anna had a really hard time with this boyfriend. She kept kind of feeding her bits of information like you don't need him. And she wanted her to dump him because she would pay for the movie film that he was supposedly going to pay for. I don't know. There was a lot of money involved in why they were dating. They did end up breaking up though, because of a lot of different reasons, but ultimately,
do people see how she throws her papers around?
I do.
Guess who has to clean those up later?
I clean them up sometimes. I've been better about it. Anna knew everybody. At night, she'd take to hosting large dinners attended by CEOs, artists, athletes, even celebrities. One night, Neff found herself seated next to her childhood idol, Macaulay Culkin.
What?
Right.
That was not the name I thought you were going to say.
But she said like this whole time she's like sitting next to her idol who apparently is Macaulay Culkin. But she couldn't even like say anything to him because Anna was just like talking her ear the whole time. So she was at the best parties. She was just everywhere, seen by everyone. She managed to be in all sorts of right places. In 2015, at a party thrown at a startup mogul in Berlin, she was wearing really fancy clothes. I'm going to get this wrong. Balenciaga. And someone mentioned that she flew in on a private jet.
Ooh.
Right? Fancy. It was unclear exactly where her money came from, though. No one could really pinpoint, like, where this was coming from. But it's also not really the culture to ask. There's a lot of,
trust fund babies,
yeah, in that world where you maybe have a lot of really close friends but don't know really anything about them. That kind of world. Yeah. Do you have any of those friends?
I don't have Is any trust fund baby friends.
It's not me. It's definitely not me. So, Anna was everywhere too. She managed to get in with this Beijing museum, and she proposed to go to this go to Venice with the owner of this Beijing museum. And he thought it was a little strange that, he said, quote, a little weird, when Anna asked him to book the plane tickets and hotel on his credit card. But he said, okay, whatever. So he did that. And she was only paying in things in cash everywhere she went, which he thought was a little weird, just a little. And he said, you know, ultimately we got back. She never paid me back the money, but it, you know, that wasn't that much money, you know, $2,000 or $3,000. So he ended up forgetting about it too. I wouldn't forget $2,000 or $3,000.
Pay up, bitch.
But when you're super rich, you can be forgetful. I mean,
oops.
I'm so rich, I forgot to have my money.
It'd be like, you know, a quarter for us. Like, oh, I'm sorry, I forgot to give you that quarter back.
Yeah, sorry about that. $3,000. Just forget about it.
Forget about it.
Yeah, I mean, and maybe that's why it was so, like, not noticed, because it's so odd for a wealthy person to, say, have a taxi, put on their friend's credit card. Like, those little things don't add up when you have money. They just normally pay it. But these little things were starting to happen more and more. So in January of that 2015.
Are we getting to the rags part of the story?
Soon-ish, Anna hired a PR firm to put together a birthday party at her favorite restaurant in Soho. Very cool. A lot of successful people were there. She began to just kind of bounce around the globe after that point, like traveling with people, spending tons of money. James Cordoso, one of the owners of the Surf Lodge in Montauk, said, "I thought she had family money." Delvey's father was a diplomat from Russia, said another person. Another insisted he was an oil industry titan. As far as I knew, someone else said her family was the Delvey family and they were big in antiques in Germany. Another person said that her dad was a millionaire tech CEO. So, like, all these different stories that are all very different.
Changing your story up means you're a liar.
Liar. So she then wanted to start a foundation that was actually going to be like a nightclub. But she wanted to call it the Anna Delvey Foundation, which makes it sound like a nonprofit.
It does. It makes it sound like some kind of charity.
But she wanted it to be like a art club sort of thing.
Okay.
Like that, yeah. Yeah. So, she started pursuing this lease to get a building. And this is where I'd kind of say where Anna's riches start to turn to rags, because she reaches out and starts trying to secure loans for this $25 million building.
Do you see it's like getting really windy outside?
Yeah, it is kind of. It was windy in the storm. It was windy in the valley today, earlier. So Anna.
Hopefully we won't lose power.
Oh, if we disappear, that's what happened. And not that we hit our time limit.
That was kind of embarrassing.
Especially because you kept talking.
We're just cut off. Like, oh, I guess we're done.
So Anna described her vision of this place of her foundation. It was going to have three restaurants in it, a juice bar, and a German bakery.
Ooh.
And apparently she kept trying to sell the
some schnitzel
realty firm that she was very prominent in Germany. And her dad was going to fund this big project for her. But it needed capital. So $25 million on top of the existing $25 million.
Is this where she tries to get money?
She wrote an email to a prominent Silicon Valley publicist in 2016 and said, if you think this is something you could help us with, and anyone might be a good fit culturally for this project, let me know. However, she backpedaled from this and said, if I were to bring in investors, they would say, oh, she's 25. She doesn't know what she's doing. And so she wanted to do this herself. So she decided not to get outside funding. To help secure a loan, she reached out to one of her new finance friends that she had met. He was actually the prosecutor of Jordan Belfort of Wolf of Wall Street. So, like, she met all these, like, big-name people.
She's resourceful AF. I have to give her credit in that regard.
Like, seriously, she met everyone she needed to meet to make things happen. That's for sure. Hmm. Yeah, yeah. So she said that... one of the problems started happening because they started looking into her needing to put that money down. And Anna said that she needed a loan because her personal assets, which are quite substantial, were outside of the U.S., some of them in trust with UBS, and they were just outside. And they said the money would be fully secured through a Swiss bank, like Post.
Sounds like something I've only heard of in movies. They always talk about these Swiss banks.
I know. And I was reading it and I'm like, that's a thing. It's like a legit thing that people go, oh, Swiss bank.
Swiss bank.
Like that means there is money. There. Secret money.
It's all about the secrets. The secret money.
Yeah. What happened though, so like City National Bank was on point. Let me just say that. They received a list of figures from a man named Peter Hennick that said, please use these for your projections for now. I'll send a physical statement on Monday. They sent back, are you from UBS? Because you have an AOL address. Apparently AOL, which I know, is very outdated and people don't use that anymore.
And then, instantly got the dial-up sound in my mind.
Grinding gears. This was Anna's email, an email from Anna, and she said, Peter is head of my family office. So she was formatting these emails, trying to create a line.
Story.
Yes, yes. So you start to see some of
her
threads.
Web.
Yes. With Anna in fundraising mode, she started having like, it went from club people and celebrities to, you know, briefcases, Rolexes, like that crowd of businessmen showing up at her meetings. And she was all of a sudden on calls with lawyers. And I mean, she was working that scene hard. And a lot of that NEF, that concierge desk woman, witnessed a lot of this part of it. So this is just kind of growing into a bigger and bigger problem. So she met the
I was shaking my head in disapproval at your paper flinging ways.
Okay, so that the pharmaceutical guy who like screwed people over on their diabetes insulin and like upcharged all of these like really important medications, and he
the had, big pharma story?
Yeah, that dude. I forget his name.
I can't remember the name either.
So she's actually like met him one night and said that they were like best friends, but they'd only met once. And he said that even though he was a nationally like known person, he felt like a computer geek next to her by how much she just like flaunted herself to everybody. So she had like this very big persona.
A lot of charisma. I think you have to
pull something
do a scheme.
Off like that. Yeah.
You got to get people in.
And she adamantly said that she did not intentionally have any of this happen. It just all unfolded. I highly doubt that. So
seems very calculated to me.
Right? I agree. So all of a sudden, there started becoming confusion because the guy who owned the building, Anna said that that she was like in the process of getting the building, and this guy shows up to her hotel and talks to Neff and says, well, if she's securing this building, why is she staying in such a low room here? Because my dad owns this hotel. Why wouldn't she be staying in a suite? Like my dad would, my dad would have her like up top if she was this big to do person.
Good question.
Right. It was like this good, like, ooh, okay. But this is how good she is. This is what she says back. She says, so Neff comes to her and decides to bring this up. She says, you ever have someone you do so who does so many favors for you that you just kind of want to pay them back in silence? Neff said, that was genius. Like, because it shut her up. She went, oh, yeah. Like, so you try not to take more because they've done so much for you. Because
she's so humble.
She's so humble. Even though, like, her attitude from what everyone right. said, she was not a humble person. Like, please and thank yous weren't her thing at all. So she kind of slid off of that. Continued for a bit more. Here's a picture of her at a after party in 2014 there. You can see her face. So Neff's manager called to ask and address a delicate issue. It seemed that this hotel that she's staying at hadn't received any credit card on file for her to charge. Because the hotel was so new when she first arrived, they never took the card, and she said that they were going to get a wire transfer, and that just never happened.
Oh, my God.
Guess how much money is?
Oh, no. What does she owe?
$30,000.
$30,000. Why would they let that get to that level?
Because she was throwing cash money around, so everyone, and I think this was a thing with everybody that I've read in this, is like they just shrug it off because she clearly had money.
I want to know exactly how much cash money she actually flung around.
She did fling a lot around, and she did that because she cashed fraudulent checks within her own bank account.
And got some cash to fling.
So she received fraudulent money, flung the cash, but never had the credit in order to have cards or things like that. So
I'm just wondering, you know, grand. If I was going to pull the scam.
Yeah.
How much cash I would need to secure to fling.
Yeah, I think, I'm trying to think here. Gosh, I don't even know how much she originally had, at least to start. So she had to pay that 30 grand for her room. Neff was really confused at this point because they were friends, and now her friend is like, oh, it's this big bill. So she was sure that Anna was good for the money. That same day, she had just spent like money and had paid her back like triple the amount that she had owed her. So she's like seeing her again, still spending money. So she just brushes it off, which seems silly. So when she was addressed by the hotel people, she started crying. She said, I told them the money would be there soon. I'm having it transferred. Big tear show. The trainer, her personal trainer, said, you know, I feel like you're in a little over your head. Maybe you need to take a break. But then something miraculous happens.
Oh.
Citibank sent Howard, the hotel, a wire transfer for Miss Anna Delvey for $30,000. Neff called Anna on her cell phone and said, where are you at? They paid the money, and Anna just shrugged it off and said, look what I got for you. And she shows her Neff a shirt that she bought her for like $200. And like it was all of a sudden like it was not a thing. The bank paid it. Not a problem anymore. So a few weeks later, Anna goes to see Warren Buffett. Apparently she got a personal meeting with Warren Buffett.
Okay.
And she was very proud of that. She said she'll be back. But another problem happened. Despite repeatedly being asked by a hotel manager that they still needed a working credit card, because that was only for the past money owed, not future money owed, her charges continued. The hotel said, if you don't give us the card, we're going to lock you out. She said, they can't do that. But guess what? They did. They locked her out. And she on the phone again just sounded very little upset about it, like they can't do that, and then talked about her visit and how she met Bill Gates. So That's was her biggest thing.
She got to meet Bill Gates too.
Mm-hmm. Yep. So when Anna got back to the hotel, she was yelling, asking for manager's name. She was mad because she was locked out. Her stuff was put into storage. So she made sure to let people know that she went to Morocco and spent that $7,000 a night on the same trip that the Kardashians did. Apparently that's a thing. Morocco. So she's just, again, just flaunting the money. She tries to get her friend Neff to quit her job and said that she'll get pay her money just to
did
quit.
She have one of those guns she that didn't. Shoots dollar bills?
That'd be fun.
Have you seen those?
No. I know, like, I thought of the t-shirt launcher, but that's different.
Yeah, I mean, if you're a real baller, you can get one of these guns that shoots dollar bills.
That sounds pretty sweet. I like it. Like, do they come out as like a single?
Like, make it rain.
I like it. So, okay. Then she shows up back, calls her personal trainer and says, can I stay at your house?
Boundary crossing.
I know, and her personal trainer was on a date, felt uncomfortable, eventually ended up folding and let her crash on the couch while she had her like boyfriend like hiding in a closet and had to like sneak him out. I don't know, it was a weird thing. And so she stayed there, and she was actually really hard to get rid of. She like rooted down.
You have to be careful who you invite in.
Her front desk guy, the owner, the trainer lady said, like, I want you to tell me when she leaves because I don't want to interact with her. I want her to leave so I can go back in and lock my doors. And she just like rooted in there and was like, well, I'm not leaving until she comes back. And she had to wait like a very long time for her to finally leave before she got to go back home.
People, be careful who you invite in.
Yes, they may never leave. Like a vampire.
Like a vampire.
So she finally just basically gives up on her stuff. Her troubles are getting worse and worse. All of a sudden, she went to a dinner with her friends and she tries to pay for the meal. Her card declines, and so she gives them a handwritten piece of paper with 12 different card numbers written on it. And the guy goes back there and sits and tries to manually enter these 12 different card numbers written on a piece of paper. None of them worked.
Were they just random numbers she came up with?
I have no idea. Or they were fraudulent, who knows? But none of them went through, and then her friends ended up having to pick up the bill. So things are getting a little more obvious that it's not working anymore. So this continued on, and I'm skipping this part, skipping it. Lots of detail about the trainer. So Anna decided that she was going to tell everyone that she was doing fine because she actually bought the building. I bought the building. That's where the investment is. That's where my money's going to come from. So she tried to like lean into that, and then poor Neff, mixed up in all of this, lets her know that the building was actually bought by somebody else.
Oh, no.
And she's like, her response was, fake news.
Obviously.
Fake news.
Fake news.
Yeah. She did actually find out that it was bought by somebody else. So that was like her dream kind of crashing in the background. Anna's hotel bills were merely the first loose thread in all of this. That began to unravel in November 2016.
I heard the sound of those dreams crashing.
Didn't you? Yeah. Like that moment when you're like, oh,
it was a tinkly sound.
So she submitted documents claiming a net worth of $60 million in Swiss accounts to City National Bank in pursuit of that $22 million loan. The following month, she submitted the same documents to Fortress and to try to get another $25 million. After the bank asked her for $100,000 for due diligence, she convinced City National to extend her $100,000 line of credit, which she then wired to Fortress. So she was playing banks off of each other.
Robbing Peter to pay Paul.
So she wired the remaining. So she ended up getting that $55,000. This is how she ended up paying off that hotel. So she did these background things in order to pay off that $30,000 bill. So that's why that got paid so mysteriously.
Was by trying to get a $25 million loan or whatever.
Mm-hmm. That's like a lot of money.
Like, can you imagine? How do you even write that many zeros out on a loan application?
Do you just write mil? Yeah. Monies?
Give me the monies.
So in May, so this jet that people had seen her fly in on, she had convinced a company called Blade to charter her a $35,000 jet by sending them a forged confirmation of a wire transfer from a Dutch bank. So again, like all these things she did were all fake.
But it takes a lot of ingenuity.
Yes.
I wouldn't even know how to start that process.
Are you asking?
I don't know how to open a Swiss bank account.
I don't know either. So she did end up getting arrested.
Oh.
Because she started going from hotel to hotel, and that just kept happening. And then finally she had police waiting for her. And she tried to brush it off as not a big deal. But she said that this is about jail. This place isn't bad at all, actually. People seem to think it's horrible, but I see it as like this sociological experiment.
Three hots in a cot? I mean, it can be an improvement for some. Right?
Mm-hmm. She made friends in there, and she said that the murders were the most entertaining to her. Mm. And she said that there are a couple of girls who were in there for financial crimes, and she said, this one girl, she's been stealing other people's identities. I didn't realize it was so easy. So over the course of 3 months, Anna was visited.
Did she go to regular prison, or did she go to white-collar prison?
I mean, I think she went to regular prison.
Murders?
Yeah.
I mean, she has white-collar crime. It seems like she'd go to the Martha Stewart type of prison.
Yeah, but she didn't actually have money. She kept saying.
But she didn't, murk someone. I mean, it wasn't, that kind of crime.
No, but she took money from a lot of people that wanted their money back. Mm. I don't know. But she kept saying, let me out of jail and I'll get the bail money. And they were so worried that she would find a way to get bail money, even though it wouldn't be legitimately, that they wouldn't release her on bail because of that.
Would this be a good time to say that I really like Martha Stewart?
Sure. Do you want to speak that platform? Go for it.
I just think she's cool as fuck.
I've only seen her recently on that, what is that channel?
VH1?
Spike? No.
Spike.
That's not it. Ooh,
that sounds so aggressive.
I don't know. Where she was cooking, doing a cooking show with
Snoop Dogg. That was VH1.
VH1? Was it VH1?
Yeah, that was a really good show. Yeah. I'm sad they stopped it. Hmm.
So, yeah. I mean, so she was in prison, but she would even have things where she wouldn't come out to go into the courtroom until her hair and makeup were perfect because she knew she was going to be photographed. So she was very aware of her public image. She said that she was upset that people characterized her as a wannabe socialite. She said she was never trying to be a socialite. She said, I had dinners, but they were work dinners. I wanted to be taken seriously. If I really wanted the money, I would have better and faster ways to get some. Resilience is hard to come by, but not capital.
What year was all this? When she was in her heyday?
Well, it was 2015 was probably the 2015, 2016, and 2017, I think, is when she got arrested.
Does this look? I mean, I'm not trying to be mean.
But go ahead.
Look at that hair and makeup. This isn't at the level where I would think she needs to be overly concerned about maintaining that.
No.
I don't think this takes any special.
But I think she had to keep up the whole image, not just her physical appearance, but that she, because everything, she just looks so confident and calm. Like she's made to be there. So she said that
this doesn't take a team, is what
she,
I'm saying.
She said she thought she had a great team around her. She was having fun. She said she might have done a few things wrong, but that doesn't diminish the 100 things that she did right.
What did she do right?
I mean, she spent a few years getting to like rub elbows with rich and famous people.
Oh, I thought you meant like how she gave back somehow to society.
Oh, no. Oh. No. So she said,
I was like, let's hear that part of the story. This probably wasn't reported on enough.
Money, there's an unlimited amount of capital in the world, you know, but there's limited amounts of people who are talented.
And she's one of the talented?
No, she's one of the people that could get capital because it's so hard to be talented. You can get the money is her point. Like, you can find the money, but if you don't have talent.
Did she actually ever find the money?
She spent a lot of it. She had to go to jail. She did pay back. So she ended up paying back all the money that she owed to everywhere because Netflix, somebody paid her money.
You'll never know because how could you ever find it on the floor?
I just threw it down on the floor. Somebody paid for her series basically to be made about her. And so she took all that money and paid the people back. And she said she had always intended to pay them back.
Wait, there's going to be a show on her?
Yes, there will be.
Oh,
mm-hmm.
When is that?
I don't know when it's going to happen or if it's going to happen. But she actually was in February. She was released for good behavior. So she's out of prison now.
She's definitely a sociopath.
No, that's what I was thinking the whole time I was researching her. Like her
100%.
100% sociopath. Like no empathy for other people. Everybody's just a tool, a means to an end.
Well, and not, I mean, even if it's just
strategy.
A shell, but
yeah.
Not like admitting that there's any, like prison's great. Love it. It's fine.
Yeah, love the murderers.
Cool. It's great.
We're friends.
Yeah, we're best buds.
Yeah, she never seemed scared through any of this. Like, even the tears seemed fake. Like, it was all a...
It's all image.
It was all a show.
It was a show.
Yeah. And this whole time, like, it was funny because, like, they asked her dad in an interview, like, do you have money? Are you some whatever? And he's like, well, you know, we paid for her apartment and her bills, but I don't know of any money anywhere. So, I mean, she had it pretty good if she would have just... You know, lived off her parents' money paying for her apartment.
Or, I mean, she could have actually pulled it off if she went a little smaller.
Yeah, I think, I mean, she really pressed that, like, her foundation was, like, the big thing that was going to do it. And I don't actually doubt that. I could see her, like, I'm going to do this and pay people back. I don't see her wanting to be dependent on people, but she had to. Mm-hmm. I see that lining up. I don't think, like, she intentionally, like, wanted to like fuck people over.
It's interesting she never went like trying to like sleep with somebody to get their money.
Mm-mm. No, she was very about being independent. She even like stopped working with lawyers who would talk down to her. She wanted to be respected by people.
Well, that's kind of cool.
Yeah, you know, I guess.
She didn't kill anybody.
Well, my
who did she injure anybody? Did she hurt anybody?
I mean, maybe financially. She gave money to a lot of people, a lot of cash. And she did end up paying people back. So she didn't owe any money at the end of it.
So really nobody got hurt except maybe emotionally.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, like people like who thought people were her friends. Yeah.
Feel people have felt betrayed and lied to.
But that whole world, everything I read was like you're best friends with someone and you know nothing about them because of the image. And, you know, you go to a party, you smile, you like act buddy buddy, and you don't care about each other. That like is literally the scene. So I feel like she just walked into a scene that already existed and just played it, and it worked for a while.
Good story.
Until next time,
run away to the circus.
Or start a foundation.
Bye.